I don't want to get off too far here on case presentation. That really isn't the purpose of our recording today. It's more to find out if you have a problem and really open you up to that reality of how important this really is. Everything from how much you make to how much you grow to how much stress you have. But let me just take this one step farther. Let me give you a statement that can help open patients up. Remember, it's always better to hear an objection than it is to stonewall. You know, maybe you're afraid you can't answer the objection, or maybe it's something that's really going to make you feel silly, something you don't want to hear, something embarrassing. Maybe they're accusing you of just being driven by money. But remember, it's always better to have it said than to not have it said, because when that patient leaves, it's kind of like when I used to be in the insurance business. I remember the vulnerable feeling you had. You get through all this process, maybe you meet with the person 8 or 10 times and they finally buy a policy. The problem was they were paying for it monthly. No matter what you said, how clever you were to get the patient to say yes and sign on the dotted line and give you a check. Wow, weren't you something? The problem was get them to give you a check every month for the next 40 years. There's only one way to do that. The person's got to want to buy the policy. In our business, they've got to want this. We can't want it for them. I think you all know the Whitehall mantra, the case presentation mantra. Tell patients what they need and then quickly and cheerfully give them what they want. I think you all knew that. Here's a simple presentation modifier that my clients have used to successfully open patients up. After laying out the ideal treatment plan and de-waffleizing it, some of you have heard our tape on waffle words. You know, if I were in your position, that's the modifier that de-waffleizes. You say, Mrs. Jones, I realize that everyone's situation is different. I know people's available time and money can vary greatly. I've told you what I think's the best way to approach this, but I want you to know we're here to serve you the way you feel appropriate. Now, that is the modifier. That's right after you got to first de-waffleize. That is, you know, if I was in your position, this is what I would do. Then you go on with this simple modifier. Mrs. Jones, I realize everyone's situation's different. I know that people's available time and money can vary greatly. I've told you what I think's the best way to approach this, but I want you to know that we're here to serve you the way you feel appropriate. Now, if the patient asks for alternatives to ideal at this point, you know, it's a make or break position. This is where you're going to win or lose this patient for life, just like the life insurance guy. You know, you've got to have them want it. Some may think that pushing for the whole enchilada is the goal in this situation. I'd suggest instead that getting the patient to open up with their concerns is really the best you can hope for. This is where they're going to turn around and finally say, yeah, I want this. Now, not I want it for you, I want it for me. If you've currently got a problem with no-shows following case presentation, this discussion is really custom-made for you. Remember, if you can get a patient to open up and then you disregard their concerns and you push for the goal line, for the big sale, the only way this patient can save face is to tell you, yes, I want this package, and then flee the practice forever. And I might say, no amount of phone stalking or newsletter mailing is going to save this situation. No-shows, like weak referrals, that is weak referral numbers, are a howling rebuke from your own patients. The next symptom in this consumerism test I'd like to look into is what I call high patient frustration. That is, you're constantly frustrated with patients. They never seem to buy enough or be reliable or grateful for the good care that they've received. I even had a newer doctor tell me recently that if he had known patients were going to behave the way they do, he wouldn't have gone into practice. He thought that patients were going to do exactly what he told them to do. He could see the great wealth that could be had for himself by just getting patients to accept a fraction of the care that they so badly need. He imagines that other businesses have an advantage because they don't have to deal with the immaturity and ingratitude that are commonly found with his patients. See, this is the frustrating thing about patients. They have an annoying tendency to act like people. Fortunately, this doctor has a large student loan and was about to take out a good-sized mortgage. He's not going anywhere in the foreseeable future. In time, he'll learn the great lesson that patients, like people, advance in their healthcare consciousness at their own pace. The doctor who's frustrated with the patients may talk a great fight about service and giving. Patients will actually let you serve and give all you want. They just want you to do it by their own definition, which unfortunately is different from our own. Patient frustration doesn't necessarily indicate that you're not a consumerist, but it does mean that you've come to see patients as a stumbling block. It can also mean that your systems need attention. You know, when a doctor calls to ask me if it's okay to sue his delinquent accounts, I ask him how they became delinquent. Almost without exception, it's a case of weak staff or systems allowing patients to financially slip through the practice unnoticed. You know, it almost seems like in the end that if you're frustrated with patients, it's because, you know, you're not getting what you need. You're not getting the respect, the gratitude, the money, all of that. And I'm telling you that it always comes down to the same thing. It's because we're not getting patients or giving patients what they need. All right, the next symptom. Believing that patients can't be trusted to make a mature decision about their health. Now, I realize that could be frustrating, kind of like the one we just talked about, but it's really a separate issue. This is a belief, a specific belief. That is that patients can't be trusted. You know, like if you tell them what they need, tell them what they should do, tell them what's wrong, they'll do the wrong thing. The doctor that comes to believe that patients are the problem tends to see himself, I found, as a hunter, and that their prey, that is patients, are just too elusive. The practice superstars see themselves more as patient trappers than in patient hunters. They know how to bait a trap, and the trap is what that would include that those referral essence components. You know, cost, convenience, control, compassion. Cost is how much they pay. Convenience is, you know, how long they have to wait to get in, how easy it is to get in. Control is case presentation. All those things that we talked about. When a patient encounters these six essence components, the result is that they will consciously and more importantly, unconsciously, want to return to the practice. I've always disliked asking people to take advice based on faith. You know, they've had a bad experience in the past. Somebody told them something, you know, like, trust me, and it didn't work. And now, you know, everything's got to be proven to them. This is an area of practice where I've learned from the best that patients can, in fact, be trusted to make the right healthcare decision. And I think you can take this on faith. See, what the big producers have learned is that patients are all in the process of learning one way or another that putting off needed treatment is both painful and costly. The doctor that thinks patients can't be trusted just hasn't been around long enough or hasn't been aware enough to see that patients eventually learn the wisdom of their own comprehensive recommendations. The secret is to keep this person in the practice until they learn that you were right all along. All right, the next symptom is to believe that you have weak scheduling staff. Yes, weak they might be, but if you've come up positive on most of these other symptoms of poor essence delivery, you can bet that the problems are probably more than just having a weak reception staff. Here's a simple test you can take to determine if the reception staff's the problem or if it's one of the other key essence components. Here it is. Are the staff actually reaching patients with their reactivation outreach phone calls? That is, are they actually connecting with the patients they're supposed to be putting back on the schedule, actually talking to the person? You see, if they're actually talking to them and they aren't ending up back on the book, the problem is probably not the front desk staff. On the other hand, if the front desk staff can't seem to find the time to make the calls, or if you suspect they're too lazy or frightened to make the calls, well, then you were right all along. They're weak. All right, next symptom. The doctor and staff regularly talk about the need to educate patients. This is a dead giveaway to a practice that's overwhelming its patients in case presentation. I found that through tedious patient education, you can reclaim a certain small number of people. You tend to find, however, that these are the people that seldom refer. So even though they now know and can probably recite the virtues of comprehensive care, they're afraid that other people won't be comfortable being sent to your patient re-education camp. See, this is frustrating to the doctor and staff, because there are a few people, you know, usually wealthy, heavily insured types, who seem to get the big idea right after hearing your story. This leaves you believing that if you just say it right, or say enough, that people will finally take the giant leap of consciousness and opt for a comprehensive approach. It all goes back to what we call step-at-a-time patient development. If you skip a step, you lose the patient for life. This concept is based on the premise that most people progress in healthcare and in life one step at a time. When you run into someone who's been out there attending the school of pain long enough to have learned some of these lessons the hard way, you only have to suggest to them that it's best to stay with the program. See, the fallacy of patient education is to think that you can predictably and scientifically jump patients several steps at a time just through a more compelling presentation. You know, look back on your own life. Are there things you're doing now that you couldn't have imagined yourself doing just, say, 10 years ago? Of course there is. You, like your patients, move forward one step at a time in your life. To me, great patient education is just designed to get the patient to seriously consider their next logical step in healthcare responsibility. I've often thought that some of my clients would like us to design a presentation that would make a patient quit making their house payment so they could buy more treatment. Stop and think about that for a moment. What if you could convince a patient to give you the money they would make on their next three house payments? Would you take it? That's why I say that from a patient education standpoint, you should feel fortunate if you can just get a patient to challenge themselves to take that next logical step. How would it look if your patient's children were evicted, put in the street, and hungry because your patient was so impressed with your treatment plan presentation that they spent all their money, you know, with you? Yeah, I know, lots of patients spend money foolishly, and they could be spending it to get badly needed treatment. That's why I say that we should feel good about just getting patients to forego a few frivolous purchases as opposed to taking a vow of poverty in our behalf. All right, next symptom. Feeling like non-referral patients are deadbeats. How often I've heard doctors and staff refer to the non-referral patients, that is the walk-ins, the advertising patients, as junk, losers, flakes, turkeys, deadbeats. I mean, and referring to them as a whole class. You tend to hear this more when a doctor is forced into the advertising arena against his or her will. They'll often refer to the advertising patients like a subspecies of human. See, when you find that you can only prosper by treating people who've been strongly referred by existing patients, you can bet that your internal practice systems are weak. See, that's comparable to the forgiveness granted to a practice when there's little or no competition. So it is with referral patients. They've been told that you are the best and worth the extra cost, if any there be. Yes, a referral patient is more forgiving than the price-driven, ready-to-run advertising patient. If the advertising and walk-in patients are commonly referred to in your practice as poor or low-quality patients, you're on notice. This indicates that you've yet to round out your consumer offering and that you're blaming the victim. You may be strong enough in one area of practice to inspire a certain segment of the market to refer. Unfortunately, this restricts your appeal to a small segment of the market. I've seen this develop as a handful of wealthy, heavily insured patients manage to overlook any number of practice failings. They refer several people to the practice, and the myth is born. The myth that we're a referral practice now and that anyone who isn't impressed with our service is a substandard patient. You've become a consumerist of the highest order when you can consistently inspire non-referral patients to the practice and inspire non-referral patients to refer. You see, this is as good as it gets. This should be the goal, to be able to get anyone who walks in off the street to be so impressed that they're going to refer. Now, I keep in mind, to do this, you're going to need time on your side. It might take months to finally reach this patient as they slowly come to the realization that what you've said all along is right, come over to your side, and start referring. So you're going to have to be very good at what you do. The systems are going to have to be strong, and you're going to have to be patient. All right, our next symptom. If you often feel persecuted because of your integrity. Now, those of you who have listened to some of our other recordings have heard us talk about the principles of counterintuitive success, or that all success arises out of counterintuitive thinking and action. If there's one predictable human default or intuitive perception, it's that we are right. Right about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and that any other way of doing what we're doing is probably not only wrong and bad, it's downright evil. When I point out to a doctor that he or she appears to be alienating patients with their prices, case presentation, or unfriendly staff, it's not uncommon to hear them justify their approach, you know, that I could expect, but they often couch it in moralistic tones. To lower our fees would be to cheapen the value of our service. No matter that no one wants their services at those prices. Or how about this? The reason Jane struggles to make financial arrangements is that because people just don't want to pay for quality care. Everyone's looking for something for nothing. Unfortunately, this blame-the-victim strategy isn't working for these people. I've watched doctors go bankrupt blaming the economy, insurance companies, and interestingly enough, their own patients. I think of this symptom as one of the extreme tip-offs to poor essence delivery. All right, let's look at our last symptom of weak consumerism. It's when patients follow through with care, but fail to refer others to the practice. This can really confuse a doctor because, you know, on the surface level, it looks like they've absolutely got it right. Earlier, I mentioned that the same practice attributes that encourage a patient to refer are the same ones that encourage a patient to remain under care. In truth, referral essence components don't really represent an all-or-nothing proposition. If you're good at some, you know, cost, compassion, control, but not at others, you can end up with mixed results. And a good example of this is when patients follow through but don't refer. In their mind, the practice is a pretty good value in light of what you pay. but not good enough to inspire wholehearted referrals. I think this is one of the most confusing, frustrating positions a doctor can find themselves in. They know they're doing a good job with patients. They believe this because the patients praise them and they follow through with care. This is frustrating because every outward sign tells them that their delivery is fully consumerized. And all would be well except that one indicator, direct patient referrals. If that's not there, then it's not fully consumerized no matter what patients tell you. See, this can leave a doctor feeling like the universe just isn't fair and balanced. Why should someone like them, who appears to do such a good job of impressing patients, fail to get the ultimate payoff, the referral? I think of all the symptoms of poor consumerism, this one is the cruelest. The doctor believes that he or she have been singled out for persecution. Why should someone who's loved by all have to resort to advertising to fill holes in their daily schedule? This last symptom serves as a grim reminder that practice consumerism offers no consolation prize. When you deliver on the six essence components, you get flooded with referrals, and you will until your peak time capacity is finally overwhelmed. There are no exceptions. I hope you're taking this 12-point test has really brought home the ease with which we fool ourselves into believing that someone other than ourselves is really to blame for our monthly practice statistics. I'd like to conclude with something I mentioned earlier, that in the end it all comes down to whether or not patients refer. That's why we say that all practice statistics, ratios, trend analysis, all of these only exist to explain why the practice is or isn't achieving its goal of increased patient referrals. Thanks for listening to this presentation on consumerism diagnostics. Now, for those of you who managed to score well, I would say that you have a score of 9 or better to score well. Or for those of you who plan to improve this score in the foreseeable future, I would like to invite you to participate in one of our upcoming new patient training camps. While consumerism will be one of the topics discussed at the new patient training camps, there will be numerous other new patient development programs introduced. You see, these are the programs and the marketing approaches used by some of our most successful clients, what we call the superstars. If I had to sum up the essence of these new patient training camps in a few words, I'd have to say it was about the implementation of a powerful new patient development strategy that we call full spectrum marketing. Most doctors who've had to go in search of new patients either end up trying unsophisticated direct outreach advertising, something they've cooked up themselves or with a penny saver ad representative, or they awkwardly ask patients to send in friends and family. As I mentioned earlier on this recording, asking for referrals seldom hurts. Well, certainly seldom hurts more than your pride. But let's face it, if you're willing to degrade yourself in front of your own patients in search of a few referrals, why not learn how to do it right? Why not learn how the superstars do it? I found that most doctors actually believe that the big practices have an unseen advantage of some sort, like they don't really have competition, or they have slam dunk insurance, or they're naturally charming personalities. I've found that the true story to just be the opposite. Most of them have no insurance, tons of competition. This actually seems to force them to perfect their technique, and they surprisingly have timid personalities. At the new patient training camp, you're not only going to see and hear from these superstars, but you're going to learn the simple but effective methods that they've used for attracting large numbers of new patients. You'll see why we've called our grand practice building strategy full spectrum marketing. See, most doctors see their new patients drop a bit and they panic. What they don't realize is that there are actually four major new patient resources. Yes, two of these are referrals and advertising. And yes, we're going to show you how to knock these two out of the park. But what few doctors, other than the superstars, ever seem to figure out is that there are two other powerful methods for flooding a practice with high-quality new patients. This is what full-spectrum marketing is really all about, using all the resources available to access the new patients that you want. Here's a challenge I'd like to give you. It's the same one I'd make to anyone concerned about the new patient trend in their practice. Here's the challenge. Try as you might, I don't believe there's a practice out there that can actually process the new patients that would result from even marginally bringing two of the four powerful new patient resources online that represent the full spectrum marketing system. If you can actually treat the new patients that would result from using three of the four full spectrum programs, you're without a doubt a production superstar. At the end of this seminar, I'm always amazed to see that doctors who walked into the meeting worried about how they will ever get enough new patients to fill their practice always leave almost frightened at the thought of how they're going to manage to actually treat the number of new patients that they now feel are imminent in their practice. As always, seating is limited at these meetings, so if you want to change your problem overnight from demand to delivery, get to this meeting. The seminar is going to be held here in Scottsdale, Arizona, this April 8th and 9th in 2005. The seminar has been priced in the past at $2,997 for the doctor. But as a monthly audio subscriber, you can come for $2,397. That's a savings of $600. And yes, you can make four payments of $600 each if that would be of any help. So if you'd like to trade your demand problem for a delivery problem, call Marcia here at Whitehall at 623-934-2108 and reserve your seat today. Thanks for listening.